This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Hello, everyone. Yes, we've been collecting things from Australia, natural history, anthropology, for 150 years. And we still are collecting things from Australia when possible. And what I'm going to show you today, after just a few photographs of some of our earlier collections, then all of the rest of the pictures will be from the Arnhem Land collection. And actually, most of these pictures are actually on our website. So if you want to see them tomorrow or the next day, all you have to do is go onto our website and you'll be able to see them again. So the Smithsonian Institution Department of Anthropology has about 70 accessions that include cultural materials from Australia. These began with the United States Exploring Expedition from 1838 to 1842, with the last in 2008. Some of these accessions include only one piece, while others include a few hundred. While the largest collection is the Arnhem Land Expedition of more than 500 pieces of ethnological and archaeological material, several other accessions include significant art and artifacts. So in this presentation, I will focus on the collections of ethnographic and archaeological materials, of which I am the curator, while leaving aside materials in other sections of the anthropology department, such as the National Anthropological Archives, the Human Studies Film Archives, and the biological departments. The first and one of the most significant collections to be accessioned by the anthropology department includes 12 pieces from the United States Exploring Expedition, 1838 to 42, under Captain Wilkes. The U.S. Exploring Expedition collected at least 4,000 ethnographic objects, outnumbering the total ethnographic collections made during the three Pacific voyages of Captain Cook by at least one-third. And in addition, the U.S. Exploring Expedition collected 2,000 birds, 150 mammals, 1,000 corals, crustaceans and mollusks, numerous fish, and 50,000 plants. Captain Wilkes was accompanied by scientists who collected, classified, and published, as well as artists who depicted places and events. And it is significant to note that of the 4,000 ethnographic objects collected during the voyage, only 12 are from Australia. To compare the collection from Australia made during the visit of Cook on his first voyage, only 6 objects can be identified from that voyage. And they are a shield, spears, and javelins. But also important from Cook's voyage is a drawing by Tupaya, which some of you may have seen. Tupaya was a Raiatean priest, navigator, who traveled with Cook to Australia from the Society Islands and learned how to draw and use watercolors during the voyage. And during the voyage, Tupaya made one drawing called Aborigines in Two Canoes, and I don't think I brought that, but I might have it on another flash drive. The Aborigines in Two Canoes is probably one of the earliest illustrations of Australia made by a non-European person, and it's the original is now in the British Library. And it depicts Aborigines fishing with spears. Now, collections, by their very nature, are selective, depending on the quality of contact as well as the length of time spent in an area. And during Cook's voyages, contact was minimal, and the collection from the exploring expedition, I suspect, came mostly from Europeans and Americans living there, especially missionaries. Of course, statements about the botany, zoology, or culture of any area or group visited during early voyages should not be made, or if it is made, not believed. Nevertheless, Horatio Hale, an expedition linguist on the U.S. Exploring Expedition, did make such a statement after the Exploring Expedition returned. And he said, this is a quote, "Among the collections of the Exploring Expedition will be found nearly all of the articles of native manufacturers in use among two tribes of distinct races, the New Hollanders, that is the Australian Aborigines, and the Fijians, those of the former numbering about a dozen, while the latter yield several hundred. A single glance at the two collections will give a clearer idea of the wide differences existing between these tribes than any descriptions." Well, this ethnographic conclusion illustrates the mid-19th century ideas about nature of man and culture, when it was more or less assumed that a restricted range of material culture meant an impoverishment of the rest of the society and culture. Indeed, the complexities of Australian Aboriginal social structures and ritual complexes were not yet known to the outside world. So what they collected at that time was very minimal, including objects and information. The collection made during the U.S. Exploring Expedition and now at the Smithsonian includes three boomerangs, three spear throwers, a club, two shields, a reed bead necklace, and a possum skin cloak. These were the first boomerangs to come into the U.S. National Collection, and I understand that early documented boomerangs are not very numerous. The lack of this iconic Australian boomerang even being mentioned at all during Cook's voyage is of interest. The lack of interaction and even observation suggests that the voyagers on Cook's voyage never even saw a boomerang in use. Therefore, if one was collected, its use would not have been known. Even in accounts of later voyages, such as the voyage that brought the first settlers to Australia, there appears not to have been a description of this unique object type. There is, however, in a 1789 drawing of a boomerang, which is called, and this is a quote, "a kind of blunt sword of hard wood," suggesting that the author and artist did not know its function. So at the time of the U.S. Exploring Expedition, the boomerang was still enigmatic. Artist Drayton depicted a man with weapons and a boomerang, and Pickering in his journal noted that the boomerang is, and this is a quote, "entirely unique, and its performances were for a long time doubted by the professors. This is a curved, flat stick, which when thrown by a skillful hand may be made to return to the place of starting, hit an object behind a tree, or assume the most unexpected directions at the will of the thrower." End of quote. So perhaps the three documented boomerangs from the 1840s in the Smithsonian will be of interest to boomerang enthusiasts. The other important item from the U.S. Exploring Expedition is this skin cloak. Now, I understand that there are only about seven historic cloaks of this type known, in addition to, of course, the beautiful new ones that are made. There's one beautiful new one in the Culture Warriors exhibition in an exhibition in Washington, D.C. right now. And yesterday I saw one on exhibit here. So I guess they're not as rare as they used to be. The Smithsonian is fashioned, this one, from 22 possum skins and one kangaroo skin, and is fully incised with geometric designs on the skin side of the cloak. Now, all the rest of the things I'm going to show you are from the Arnhem Land expedition. But I'm going to talk about some of the earlier, the 19th century collections that we have, but these are not from the 19th century. The pictures are all from the Arnhem Land expedition. So other 19th century collections, besides the U.S. Exploring Expedition, include the museum's second boomerang, which came in 1872, from a William Blackmore, the founder of the Blackmore Ethnological Museum in Salisbury, England, along with 78 other non-Australian objects. In 1882, a hatchet or axe was given by William Nye Jr., and in 1889, four axes were given by Matilda Stevenson, who was a member of the Bureau of American Ethnology at the Smithsonian. But in 1891 and 1895, Alfred C. Haddon, who I'm sure most of you have heard of, famous for his work in the Torres Straits with British expeditions, gave and exchanged to the Smithsonian 139 specimens, 51 of which are from the Torres Straits. So if any of you are Torres Strait specialists, I invite you to come and see them at the Smithsonian. Other 19th century exchanges included three Australian throwing sticks from the British Museum of Natural History in 1891, a circlet from the Royal Zoological Museum in Florence, Italy, a spearhead from the Royal Museum in Salford, England, in 1896. Two shields were purchased in 1892 from the U.S. consul in Australia, whose name was Rounceville Wildman, if any of you know him. And there's the fire-making sets and message sticks that came from William Villiers Brown in 1893. Five archaeological specimens from J.E. Kearney, and objects came from other departments in the Smithsonian's Natural History Museum. An adze blade and two boomerangs in 1893 from Mr. Milner. Scrapers from Tasmania came from a Mr. Williamson, and so forth. But the first piece of basketry, all of these things that I've been telling you about are the usual, I suppose. But the first piece of basketry, described as a twined wallet of grass, came in 1899, along with two parrying shields, two throwing sticks, a boomerang, a bow, and a stone axe from Honorable Frederick Webster Godding, the American consul in Newcastle, New South Wales, who reported to the U.S. Secretary of State that, this is a quote, that he was making a collection of Aboriginal implements and utensils from New South Wales and Queensland, and that he would be glad to give them to the United States National Museum, which he did. Now, moving on to the 20th century, we have a similar range of materials that I've been describing to you, and just me to list them will be a bit boring. However, in the 20th century, interest in the boomerangs continued, and a gift in 1903 of three boomerangs from the Honorable Henry Smith were noted. It said, these were made for the purpose of experiment, the curve of the angles being different in each one so as to find out the best construction for flight. Also, further boomerangs were given by Mr. Shaw in 1917, Celinda Ford, 1921, et cetera, et cetera, and so on throughout the century until now our collection of boomerangs numbers 64. Also, there was a flow of stone hatchets, spears, spearheads, and clubs, and they continued, for example, 15 specimens from a Mr. McAllister in 1922. But a significant exchange, which I found very interesting indeed, there was an exchange of 73 pieces that was accessioned by the Smithsonian in 1927 from the Public Library Museum and Art Gallery in Perth. This included 15 spears, 6 spear throwers, 4 boomerangs, 3 clubs, 3 food troughs, an axe, 2 stone implements, a glass spearhead, 2 bags, a basket, 2 forehead bands, 3 armlets, a chest band, a neck band, a head band, a shell necklace, a belt of human hair, a belt of human hair with a shell ornament, 2 fur string belts, a feather head ornament, 3 shaved stick ornaments, a nose bone, a nose stick, 2 sacred sticks, two bull roars, two dancing boards, a message stick, a churi, a women's digging stick, ochre, a shell ornament, and a piece of gum. Moving right along, I'm skipping some, a group of objects that was probably collected in the field came to us in 1936 after the death of a Dr. Elwood Mead, who had spent several years in Australia consulting for the state of Victoria between 1907 and 15, assessing irrigation needs along the Murray-Darling river system and other irrigation matters in Australia and New South Wales, Queensland, and South Australia. And in addition to the usual objects, there were included a feather wand, woven bags, a woven bed, I can't read my writing, a straw basket, and several woven carrying bag, and a fishnet in a collection given by Price J. and Maddybell Gittinger, there were 15 objects, including wands from the Morning Star and Joway ceremonies. So those might be of interest to some of you as well. But of course, the largest and most important collection is from the Arnhem Land Expedition of 1948. And this includes, in the Smithsonian, 483 ethnographic objects and 158 archaeological objects. The ethnographic materials are noted in our accession record to be from the following places: Deliciaville, Umbakumba, Yirrkala, Elko Island, Milingimbi, and Onpele. The archaeological materials, of which I said there were 158, include Umbakumba, Yirrkala, Milingimbi, Onpele, Malay Trepang site in Winchelsea Island, Malay pottery and porcelain from along the shore of Port Bradshaw, two shell heap excavations in Milingimbi Island, caves on Gallery Hill or Unbalanja, two caves at Onpele Hill, and most of these archaeological materials, as you know, were retained in the Australian Museum Sydney, except the 158 that came to us. Now, the ethnographic collections in the USA portion of the whole collection, most of it was retained in Australia. And the USA portion included some 483 ethnographic objects. Many of these pieces are bark paintings, mainly which I've been showing you here. And they have been examined by several Australian Aborigines over the years and numerous other researchers from Australia and elsewhere. And I came to the Smithsonian in 1980, and ever since I came to the Smithsonian, there have been numerous people who have come to use the Australian collection, including Australians, people from overseas, and Aboriginal peoples as well. So the collection is rich in bark paintings, 90 of them. These are divided into three groups. There are 21 from Umbakumba, 33 from Yirrkala, 36 from Onpele, and also it includes most other artifact types, including such things as didgeridoos. Occasionally, we still have an opportunity to add to our collection. The last two accessions were in 2008. These included of three bark paintings from a man named Eric Planta, who collected them in 1967, and a duckbill platypus blanket, which was collected by Evelyn McCutcheon in 1925. And now if I can just go through these real quickly. You see there are a lot of bark paintings. Finally, a few words about the display history of our Australian materials. In Hall 8, which was a hall, it's always called Hall 8, which was the Asian and Pacific Hall. There were four cases that had ethnographic objects from Australia, including two introductory cases to the Pacific Hall and two devoted strictly to Australia. And you see the human image here. It's from, if I can find out, there it is, this one, yes. And here's an Australian original. So this was the introductory case to the Asia-Pacific Hall. And these exhibits were up for about 40 years and came down just a few years ago. So this is the introductory one. And then this was another section called the Diversity of Pacific Cultures. And this over here, it's very difficult to see, I'm sorry, but it was on a side wall, and it's said to be a bark garment. And then there were two cases that were dedicated to completely to Australia and had mainly artifacts from the Arnhem Land expedition. This one is called the Australian Way of Life. Whoops, sorry. And then this one called Religion and Symbolism in Arnhem Land, which of course included only objects from the Arnhem Land expedition. And then finally, that went up in about the 1960s and came down just a few years ago. So all of those objects were up for about 40 years. And then in 1985, we had a temporary exhibit of the United States Exploring Expedition, which was up for a year and included our 12 pieces from the U.S. Exploring Expedition. Here they are. Here's the possum cloak, and they included. All the 12 pieces were on exhibit at that time, and at the moment, unfortunately, we do not have any Australian materials on exhibit in our museum, but we hope that that will change shortly and that we will have a temporary exhibit or perhaps even a permanent one. So thank you very much.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.